It's been a month, but we are back. It's Bound for Disappointment, the late night edition. As we record this, the Padres are still playing a game, which is insane because this is usually my Seinfeld rerun time. So it's cutting into that. My name is Kevin Charity in San Diego, California. I am joined, as always, by the gentle giant, Mark Wilkins in Phoenix, Arizona. What's going on, Wilkins?
What's up?
I'm going to start calling you by your last name now. That's like going to be their new thing. Wilkins.
You pronounce it weird.
How am I supposed to pronounce it?
I don't know. You kind of swallow it. I don't like it.
That's what she said. All right. So we're here. I don't really know what we're supposed to say at this point. The last time we recorded this, the Padres traded for Adam Frazier. That was kind of the main topic of our podcast. I don't know how much baseball you want to talk tonight, because to be flat out honest, oh cool, here comes Billy McKinney up. You know what he's gonna do. But I don't know about you, but I'm kind of burnt out with baseball. I was talking about this a little bit pre-show. Like, I don't know if it's the free fall from the Padres, the injuries piling up. I don't know what it is, but this team, like the energy, I mean, I just feel like the team has had the energy sucked out of it. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm burned out on the big league club, which is weird because usually I find it more of a chore to watch the minors. No offense intended to anyone. But I've had more fun at complex league games than what I've been watching lately from the big club. It's just not rewarding. It's not entertaining. It's not. I think you made a good point there. I think one thing we got really used to in 2020 from the Padres was energy and boost and hope and this feeling like they could be down 3-4 runs. They're going to put together this huge rally and. I mean, they became famous for grand slams, and now they can't even get a guy on base. It's frustrating because even with the injuries they have, everything else, they still have a core of the lineup that should be capable against anyone in the league, and it just feels like they just go silent.
Yeah, and right on cue, Billy McKinney single. To center field, Trey Turner single to left field, and the Padres are down 3-1 in the 15th inning. This game right here, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit because this might be the most frustrating game of the year, maybe outside of the Arizona no-hitter. You get a great outing from Blake Snell, and I think Blake Snell, and we've kind of criticized him on the podcast. At least I have. I'm going to speak for myself. Just because he's not been the guy that we expected as fans. We expected this guy to be kind of that frontline starter to go, you know, what you looked at the beginning of the season is like, okay, you got, you know, Yu Darvish at the front. You got Snell as your two. You got Joe Musgrove as your three and Lament somewhere in there. Hopefully he's healthy. He's probably maybe your two and you slide everybody down. And then you're like, okay. Cool. So Musgrove's our number four. And then you have Adrian Morahone and a bunch of guys kind of vying for that fifth spot, Chris Paddock. And Blake Snell, for the most part, has been pretty terrible this year. But I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was letting go of Larry Rothschild, which we can get into a little bit. But Blake Snell, the best outing he's had in a Padres uniform. He didn't walk anybody. He had 10 strikeouts, I believe. Worked in the eighth inning, gave up a home run. I mean, it happens. I mean, you sign up for that outing every single time. Use that cliche. Look like the guy that if the Padres somehow find a way to sneak into the playoffs and end up in this one-game playoff with the Dodgers, you feel pretty confident that Blake Snell for one game can fend these guys off.
Yeah, I mean, he was locating – everything. He was sweeping the breaking ball across. He was playing everywhere in the zone, which we have not seen him do.
No, not at all, really.
There wasn't that nibbling. And the home run was a, I mean, let's be honest, it was a great swing on a pitch neck high in the zone. That'll happen. That outing was everything that we've wanted from him all year. He's had a good month in August, so I wouldn't necessarily just say, hey, you know, Rothschild walked out. He said, I'm going to have the best game of the year. But
it's interesting timing, though.
It's interesting timing that he has a game that much of a step beyond what he's already had in August with Ben Fritz out there commanding the pitching staff. So sucks to see it go the wayside here like that. I mean, it's forgotten. It feels like – I mean, there's literally – technically yesterday, it was a long time ago. You said this before we started here. He had this amazing outing after a bullpen game. It's all we wanted to see, to have the Padres save their bullpen, and it still doesn't do the job because they can't get a hit.
Yeah, I mean, I've been watching this game since about the seventh inning when they had a 1-0 lead. Or actually, no, probably since the fifth inning. Kind of came in late and, you know, watched Snell really do his thing and was really impressive. And part of, I think, the criticism with Blake Snell this year has been the fact that he's been a 4 or 5 inning guy. And tonight, I mean, he threw 116 pitches, I believe, 7 2/3 innings. That's... You know, and the fact that, you know, the Padres are, you know, as we're saying this, as we're recording this, you're going to listen to it tomorrow and you'll know the result of the game. But the Padres are probably going to lose the game, and you don't get to reap the benefits of him working deep into a game. I mean, as a Padre, outside of Musgrove's no-hitter, worked eight, you know, into the eighth inning this year. I mean, maybe Darvish has, but I don't have that off the top of my head. But, like, then you come out and you basically turn this into a bullpen game. Because you've burned, I think they burned every pitcher in their bullpen tonight. I mean, Sean Anderson came out, threw the ball really well. Camarena just came in and, you know, got hit around a little bit. But it's hard to point the finger at Camarena when you've had, you know, what, the 10th, 11th, 12th, 13th, and 14th innings, so 5 innings, to score one run when you have a runner on second base with nobody out, and you can't do it. You know, Hosmer being the elite team leader that he is, repeatedly hit ground balls to the left side to get that runner over, and nobody could get him in. You know, Grisham had a failed bunt. Tatis is having a really rough night. I don't know. Let's talk about that a little bit. What was your initial reaction when you heard that Tatis was moved to the outfield?
Didn't like it. Obviously, a player has more value at shortstop doing what he does. And I think just when you've built your franchise around saying, like, this is the guy at shortstop, it feels weird to suddenly change course after they've been pretty adamant about not changing course in that situation. And he – I want to say 2020, he had the best defensive run saved at shortstop. Obviously, a short season. It felt like he had turned the corner on a lot of the problems that were there in his rookie year, and it felt like they all came back this year. So at first I said, hell no. Like, I don't want to see this. This is not the plan. Once they did it, it was like, okay, if you can do this with Cronenworth at shortstop, I can live with it. And you know, Cronenworth is a guy who could hold it down for a few years at least. And for all you know, Abrams is that guy. You don't know. It's like when a team comes out with new uniforms, and if the new uniforms don't hit right away, like if it's not like the Padres with the brown, a lot of times teams redesign something, the uniform comes out, the first time you see it, you're just like, no, why would you change it? This is awful. And you grow into it. That's kind of how I've been with Tatis in the outfield. I'm not sure I like it. Obviously, I understand it. I mean, the stats are right there. And if it can keep the bat in the lineup, and if he can be, I mean, he throws in the mid 90s coming out of the outfield pretty casually. So they could be onto something there.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same way. I actually don't hate it. I think it kind of gives you some more flexibility because ultimately you can move Cronenworth over the short. And he's played pretty well over there. You know, he's played shortstop before. He's pretty solid over there. And then it allowed you what you thought was to put Frazier at second, because they're not going to – I feel like Hosmer is playing more now after the, you know, after the deadline than he did before. And so you know that they're not going to necessarily want to take out Cronenworth. They're not going to take out Hosmer. And so you thought it would be an opportunity to get Frazier some more at-bats, and, you know, that hasn't worked out well. But I think the downside of it is it's kind of taking bats away from Will Myers. Will Myers is actually the last couple of weeks has been, you know, his OPS for the season is pushing 800, at least it was coming into tonight. And so I think taking at-bats from him and then, you know, having essentially giving those bats to Frazier, who's not hitting, I think it kind of makes the offense a little bit weaker. But it's really hard to know because everything's in such a, you know, with Frazier, it's easy to criticize. I don't remember what we said about that trade, to be honest. I didn't have a problem with it. I still don't. But I think it was kind of a weird trade because you have an all-star second baseman, you trade for another one. And I think what happened was when that deal initially went down, is that Frazier was going to play some left field, and then that's gone completely by the wayside. So I kind of wondered, like, if it was just he wasn't comfortable out there or what it was. But I honestly don't know what's going on with this team right now. Like, it is – you look at the lineup on paper, and you kind of go down the order. On paper, this lineup looks pretty freaking good. I mean, you have your three core all-stars in Machado, Tatis, Cronenworth. You bring in a fourth in Frazier. You know, Tommy Pham has kind of been slumping, but at times he's looked like an above-average hitter. Myers has basically been the same guy he's always been, which is that guy with the OPS plus, you know, about 10% over league average. Tatis has been, statistically speaking, elite. And then Hosmer, at least in August, July and August, has hit a little bit better. You know, the latter part of July. I know that the beginning part wasn't so pretty, but this team they can't score runs. I mean, we're in the 15th inning right now, and they scored one run. And that run was on a, like, ground ball. I've been watching this game, like, for 10 innings. I've yet to see them hit a ball hard. And I think that's probably – I think that's the part that's honestly the most frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, Frazier looked like a platoon option for leadoff with Pham. You can go back and forth on two guys with a great eye who can get on base, and it just hasn't been nearly – I mean, Frazier in his career has been kind of an above-average utility player, and this year was – he's having a career year, and it just fell completely off the cliff. And I don't think it's a bad trade. Because Pittsburgh bought extremely high on Sawinski, and Marcano is at best a wash with Frazier right now. And
yeah,
that is what it is. But yeah, I mean, there's nothing in this lineup where it's like there's no weak point where you're saying like this person has no talent. I mean, we have the best catching unit the Padres have had in this era. Like you said, three core guys in the infield. Hosmer has not played as badly as people would like to make it out to be.
That's going to get you shot out there, just so you know you said that.
Oh, not in Arizona. I'll be good. But Hosmer has played just well enough to not justify getting rid of, basically. He's not playing great. Myers is not playing great. You know, Machado's had a terrible month. There's just no one where you almost put it, you get back in a situation where you're waiting for Tatis to take over a game. And I mean, Grisham is a non-factor lately, which sucks. The bench isn't great.
Yeah.
I don't know.
So The things that have come out in kind of in the reporting through, I believe, Dennis Lynn of The Athletic, one of the things that kind of came out is that the Padres internally, you know, in the clubhouse, were kind of expecting – oh, Tatis just got a hold of one, I think. Oh, it's gone. Tie game. Nice assist by the right fielder out there. This game's not going to end tonight because the Padres aren't going to score anymore because they don't get to get another free runner on base until the next inning. So as my pessimism is just at an all-time high. I mean, where was that the last five innings? But hey. But to kind of go back to my original point, this is the battle of recording in the middle of a game. But oh, cool! Break up the chain. Is that's just what we need? I'm done with that swag chain, by the way, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But what the reporting was saying is that the Padres internally in their clubhouse expected a boost in their rotation, which I expected them, honestly. Like, I looked at their roster and said they need two starting pitchers, not just one. And I wasn't necessarily saying they had to go out and get Max Scherzer and Jose Berrios. They needed guys that are competent. And I don't know who those guys are. I mean, some people say Zach Davies. I mean, if the price is right, I would have pulled the move on him, just because at least you know what you're going to get. And you know that he's going to at least be healthy for the most part. And they didn't make any of those trades. And then they go out and they trade for Daniel Hudson, which I think was a good move, personally. I like that move, especially, you know, in hindsight with Pomeranz going down with the season-ending injury. The Hudson trade was really good. And what they gave up is Mason Thompson. Some people feel strongly about him. I don't think his command's going to be good enough to be an impact guy in the bullpen. I could be wrong on that. Then Yordi Barley, who's 3 years away from being a factor at the big league level and plays, I mean, he plays shortstop now, but I mean, he's probably going to end up in left field. And so you make those trades, which, you know, okay, these moves are solid, but the really one glaring deficiency that you have on your clubs, you never addressed. And not only after you don't address it, you lose Chris Paddock almost on cue with an oblique strain. Yu Darvish went down in Arizona with a back injury. He's coming back tomorrow, but he missed time. And so you basically, your rotation is Joe Musgrove and Blake Snell and question mark. And it's really hard to win games that way.
Yeah. I mean, they've put themselves into a situation, and I've seen a lot of people talk about how an innings eater isn't any sort of actual positive outcome.
Bullshit.
But what I don't think is factored into that analysis statistically is the effect that it has on other pitchers. Like, I don't think they look at how that affects your bullpen to just say, you know what, we can get the same result from these guys. It's not factoring the fatigue, the effect on everyone else. If they could have gotten a Zach Davies, which there are claims out there that Merrill Kelly would have cost Hassel. I refuse to believe that's even remotely true.
If that's the case, because Merrill Kelly was actually my number one guy that I wanted. Realistically, obviously, I didn't think Scherzer was realistic, but yeah, that trade, that if that was what was on the table, then AJ's right to walk away from that, in my opinion.
Right,
but
I don't think Davies would have cost anything like that because he's a rental. I think Kelly has a couple more years of control. A guy like Davies, like you said, I mean, at his worst, he would probably give the Padres 4 or 5 innings every time he went out there. And at his best, he could maybe be closer to what he was last year. And you know what you have with him. You're not going to start a playoff game with Zach Davies.
No.
You're not going to do, you know, all these other things with Davies. But just to put him into that bullpen spot, I still look at it like that may have been a failure, because I think that if you could have a reliable 5 innings on that bullpen spot, I think we might be looking at a different last 10, 15 games.
Well, there's other guys that were out there too that, I mean, potentially could have been added to the rotation. A guy like Andrew Heaney, who actually ultimately went to the Yankees. Not a great pitcher. I mean, he's got good strikeout numbers, but maybe getting him into the National League and out of the American League might have been better for him. He didn't go for a lot, in my opinion. You look at, you know, obviously the Scherzer deal to the Dodgers is, I think that also was deflating, because you looked at one point, the Padres went from adding Scherzer to losing Scherzer to having the Dodgers get him to adding Turner as well, which is just a huge swing. But yeah, I think when I watch this team, and again, I'm not around the team every day. I don't have a clubhouse source like I feel like everybody has these days. But when I watch the team, what I feel like I see just with my own eyes, the word that comes to mind for me is deflated.
Yeah, that's a good one. I mean, it's just like
flaccid is another good one.
Don't call a baseball team flaccid. Yeah, you're looking at a team that really did thrive on energy, momentum, positivity, all those things around it, and to see it kind of drop off is really drastic. I mean, they became a team known for swag, and it's hard to have swag during a huge skid. So they've kind of shown their dark side of the world for a little bit here. It's been very very different team, a very different energy, and they need this one tonight. Which, I mean, we usually go for quite a while on this thing. This thing may not be over by the time we're done.
And that's like a game we play. We should just keep talking until the game ends. See how long that goes.
You say that, and this will be the first 25-minute episode of the entire show.
Yeah. Right. Well, I mean, I think Camarine is going to come out again. So let's talk about the move real quick, and then we're going to move into some non-Padres things. Talk about some Mackenzie Gore. Well, that's a Padres thing, but it's not a major league Padres thing. But Larry Rothschild fired, or I guess he was relieved of his duties was the term that was used. Larry Rothschild is out. Let's talk a little bit about that. What were your initial thoughts when you heard that?
Had to do it. I've seen a lot of the old school baseball people like Kurt Bevacqua say that it was stupid, that it had no meaning on this season. I think that's a load of crap. I think that
tell it to Blake Snell.
Yeah, tell it to Blake Snell. I mean, I think that's true. I mean, I think that there was a, you know, Tingler talked about a new voice. I think that the pitchers were either tuning them out or were actively frustrated with the messages they were getting. And if that's the case, you can't make that change soon enough. And I'm not saying that Ben Fritz is necessarily the answer. I don't know if he even gets an interview for the job next year. I don't know where he stands in regards to that, but he's someone who's been around the organization for a while in a lot of different roles. He's well-regarded. And if the pitchers respond to him over the stretch, maybe they get something different. I think Snell was hopefully the start of that. But with Rothschild, I mean, you've seen a few years now of a track record of someone who has outlived his usefulness. Someone who Sonny Gray basically credited with trying to ruin his career. Limiting use of two of his four pitches. I mean, Rothschild seems to be a specialist in taking, you know, this is a game now more than ever where a starting pitcher really needs three plus pitches. And it'd be nice to have four. And Larry seems to be the kind of guy that likes to say, no, go back and just focus on two of them with one of them being the slider. And that's great if you're Denelson Lamet until your arm explodes. But for a guy like Sonny Gray, a guy like Blake Snell, he needed that off speed. He needed all four of those pitches working. He needed that confidence to know that he had four weapons in his arsenal to use. And that's what we saw tonight. We saw a Blake Snell that was, hey, I'm coming into the zone with all four. And I have no reservations about this move whatsoever. I mean, there's nothing to lose. I mean, it's not like Ben Fritz is going to go out and get guys' arms to fall off or something, or that Rod Barajas can't manage a bullpen. There's nothing to lose. The team is out of the if you do that crap line, if the playoffs started today, well, if the playoffs started today, the Padres aren't in it. And if the playoffs started today, Larry Rothschild wasn't going to suddenly get them into it. So totally worked for me. Hopefully the results are better. I mean, I think hindsight's 20/20, but I think most fans would agree that with bringing in a manager who was attuned to what Preller's doing, who was a younger guy, who didn't have the experience. Yeah, they brought in a pitching coach who had managed before. I mean, he sucks. So, you know, Tingler's already a better manager than Rothschild ever was. So there's that whole point. But I think we're all hoping for a younger pitching coach. Like a name I've brought up a few times is Chris Fetter with the Tigers. Just someone who's a little bit more in line with what the organization's trying to do with pitching. And I think that's where they're going to go next. They're going to bring in someone who aligns with their actual goals rather than a veteran presence, because the veteran presence drove the staff insane.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, again, what people are saying internally. Oh, there's another. That's a home run for the Dodgers, and it's 5-3. AJ Pollock, 5-3 in the 16th. So,
do you pride yourself on being a man of faith, though?
Yeah, I do pride myself on being a man of faith. And that's a long drive into center field by AJ Pollock, and that's going to make it a 5-3 ball game. And anybody could have seen this coming. So, you know, whatever. With Larry Rothschild, you and I were actually kind of talking about this through Twitter the other day, and my conclusion was that I personally would fire him at the end of the season, or not bring him back. I don't know what his contract situation is. I don't know if he had a 2 or 3 year deal. What his deal was, and the reason for that is when you look at this team, and you look at guys like Blake Snell, who has the talent and the stuff, but you're not getting the most out of Blake Snell. Really, when you look at their starters, I mean, the only guy that really has pitched as expected has been Musgrove. I think Darvish did, and then he really went into a funk in July, whether that's the longer season, whether it's something mechanical, maybe it was his back, and it kind of came to a head in Arizona. I don't know that. But when you look at just the staff as a whole, I mean, there's not really anybody that's exceeded expectations from the rotation. I mean, Chris Paddock in 2019, you thought this guy was I never thought the guy was a one, but I'm like, this guy might be your two or your three, and a really good one. And he has looked like a different guy. He doesn't, you know, maybe it's the league figured him out. He really only has the two pitches. He kind of has tried really hard to mix in that breaking ball. It's worked here and there, but it hasn't been consistent. And so you look at a guy like Paddock, who in 2019 looked, I mean, he almost no-hit the Marlins. He had that outing against the Mets where he just dominated them. He had a bunch of really solid outings, and he's regressed. And so you kind of – that's one thing that I look at is – you know, now the bullpen's been pretty good. I mean, Craig Stammen coming in this year, I would say you're not picking up that 2022 option. But now I think it's a no-brainer that Stammen's back next year, right? And you look at, you know, what Melanson's done. Now, is that Ben Fritz in the bullpen? Is that Rothschild? Who knows, you know, how that works day-to-day. But I think, to me, there obviously seems to be some type of disconnect. And, yeah, I think where the trend is going with pitching coaches in Major League Baseball is you want that younger – kind of more analytical guy that uses the next gen stats and doesn't rely on feel. And I don't know what Larry Rothschild, how he coaches, but you know what the message they're getting day to day. But yeah, when you have, there's been, I believe Sabathia too is another guy that's come out kind of protesting Larry Rothschild and kind of the job that he did with him. And you hear that from multiple people, then you kind of see what you see. I think it was something that seemed almost like I felt there was no way he's coming back for 2022, even if the team made the playoffs and didn't piss away the wild card lead that they had and, you know, isn't about to lose a heartbreaking game to the Dodgers. I think it's the right move. Now, you can argue about the timing of it, but if you feel like he's not the guy, whether it's in August or whether it's in June or whether it's in May, I think you gotta pull the cord.
Yeah, I think they lost that confidence. And, you make an interesting point about I've noticed some of the media, they've talked about how Rothschild got fired despite the stats of the bullpen. And I've always wondered, where's that dividing line between where it's the pitching coach's success or the bullpen coach's success? And for the Padres, it was a very stark one where, especially lately, the rotation was terrible. The bullpen was pitching most of the innings. Who was responsible for what? I mean, name a pitcher who got better under Rothschild compared to where they were before.
I mean, if we're talking starters, I mean, you really can't.
Yeah. And that's, you know, obviously Paddock would be the biggest concern because he's one of your younger guys who's put in a lot of innings. The regression of Weathers is, I mean, that's debatable. I mean, there's been injury involved. There's been.
I think he's pitching hurt.
Yeah. I've heard a lot about that ankle and everything else. So that's debatable. But with Paddock, I mean, Paddock went from a guy where you knew he didn't have the overwhelming stuff, but he could pitch and he could day in, day out pitch. And sure, teams get more film on a young guy. They get more of an idea how to approach you as a hitter. That's where coaching comes in to get you better that next step. And instead of getting better to take that next step, Paddock became this tremendous liability. And even when Paddock got better, it was after 10 days in Arizona away from his coach.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's – yeah, I don't know. I think it's the right move. Like, I don't really – there's really nothing I could say anything more about it. I think it's – like I said, if you know, you know. Like,
I think this is the last we've ever seen of him. I really do.
Rothschild?
Yeah.
I would assume so. I mean, he's an older guy. I mean, he's 67. Maybe some team brings him in as a consultant of some kind. But no, I think, you know, I don't know what direction they're going to go. If they go internal, I think Fritz probably has a good chance of it. I know they like Pete Zamora, who's, I believe he's in AAA this year. Or is he in AA? I can't remember which.
Zamora's in San Antonio.
He's in San Antonio.
We got Young in El Paso.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, oh, God. And that's going to be caught. Okay. I'm like, this king can't end 8-3. But, I don't know what they're going to do. I mean, I know there's been some buzz about trying to poach somebody from, like, Cleveland. You know, as every time that Cal Quantrill pitches well, it kind of twists the knife in. Again, hindsight's 20/20. I still... You know, I was in favor of that move when they made it. You didn't know Clevenger was going to blow his arm out. You know, would it be nice to undo that trade? Sure. But again, hindsight's 20/20. We didn't, you know, obviously, if you know the guy, if you trade for a guy and give up six players for him and he blows out his arm a month later, yeah, you're probably not going to want to make that trade. But at the time, I think most Padre fans were fine with it. Quantrill was like the one guy in that trade, though. Do we really have to give him up? Because I just felt like, you know, when you trade big league team, because he was a legitimate big league piece at that time. He was in their bullpen and he was pitching really well. But again, I guess that's the cost of doing business. But yeah, I mean, this season, honestly, I mean, I've been watching Padres baseball since 1994. That's when I kind of came in. I was 9 years old, and this is by far the most disappointing season. Now, obviously, they can right the ship and they can make the playoffs and it won't be. But the 2010, I know a lot of people have talked about that, the 10-game losing streak in September. I don't think anybody went into that year with any expectations whatsoever. I think that was a team that they had a $40 million payroll and they kind of came out of nowhere and they won 91 games. The team in 07 was really disappointing because that team I legitimately thought was good enough to go to the World Series. And then Milton Bradley took out Mike Cameron, and then or Mike Cameron got hurt, and then Bud Black took out Milton Bradley, and you lost two of your starting outfielders and started Brady Clark in center field for game 163. So those were both disappointing. But I think this team, like, coming into the year, I mean, what were your expectations for this team?
I mean, it sucks because it was probably a wild card. But it was only a wild card because really the Dodgers. I mean, I didn't even have the Dodgers on the radar, but I really thought that the Dodgers would come in and do that Dodger thing where they spend all the money, they pick up the crazy contracts, which they did with Scherzer. They picked up his dead money, and I expected that. I expected them to make another run, and I expected the Padres to be hopefully hosting the wild card with the potential of going all the way. And as the season went on, the Giants just never have died. They just keep – they're the first team to 80 wins. So it started to become, okay, well, the Padres are going to go probably to L.A. for the wild card. And, you know, first, especially the first half of the season. I mean, the Padres played the Dodgers pretty well. So it was like, okay, they can go win one in LA and then move on. But I mean, they've really deflated from a team that had decent World Series odds in spring training. And I think the biggest thing for me was I really did believe that the weakness of starting pitching, which just tore this team apart last year. They went from just every game was this exciting, winnable thing to just this like walking the ultimate tightrope of like, can they get this done or not? And feeling like the whole offseason was spent shoring it up, which I think it was, and mm-hmm. just end up in the exact same place with bullpen games. I mean, I think everyone sat there in spring training was like, hell yeah, no more bullpen games. You know, they're gonna break camp with Morahone as their fifth. They're not even gonna have Gore or Weathers in the rotation, and they're gonna have options and it's gonna be great. And then all of a sudden it was, okay, Weathers will be number five, but you know what? Fine. It'll be able to go from there. And then it's August 26th and we're sitting here in this fate of bullpen games, which I mean, we thought we got rid of these when they changed the uniforms, but they come back to haunt us.
Yeah, dude. I never want to hear the word bullpen game again. I'm so done with this. Like, I mean, check this out, though. Like, if you look at the Padres 40-man roster, the guys that are on the 40-man or that are on the 60-day IL right now, Dan Altavilla, who came into the season, you probably thought he might be a guy, maybe. But Michelle Baez probably would have started games for the Padres this year. Mike Clevenger, obviously, we knew that was rough. Jose Castillo would look really good in this bullpen right now. Javi Guerra, I mean, I was a fringe guy to begin with. He's on the 60-day IL. He had Tommy John. Keone Kella, who you thought was going to be your 7-inning guy, he's Gavin Lux just took that one out. Oh, no, he didn't. Tatis caught it. Wow. All right. I can't judge it. Keone Kella, IL. Adrian Morejon, 60-day IL. Pomeran, 60-day IL. You know, Taylor Williams and Wingenter are still on the 60-day IL. Coming back soon. You've got nothing out of Denelson Lamet. Reggie Lawson, who would probably – a healthy Reggie Lawson starting games for the Padres right now, in my opinion. Nothing. To the point where, you know, you look at some of the guys that are on this pitching staff right now. Like, Daniel Camarino was signed this offseason as roster filler. He was designed to be a guy – that's going to be in the El Paso bullpen, and he's thrown inning. He just threw meaningful innings tonight for you. Nabil Crismet came to camp as a non-roster guy, made the team, and has been a pretty invaluable arm with the way he's been able to fill that just shitty role. Like, it's got to be the shittiest role in professional sports, in my opinion. Like, of any of the four, if you want to throw soccer in there, the five major professional sports, as the guy that comes in, takes it in the butt a couple of times out of the bullpen, and then gets immediately sent back down. You imagine that? Like, they don't do that in, like, other sports. Like, you don't go – there's not a guy – it may be the equivalent is, like, the Saints a couple of years ago. Do you remember the quarterback from Ohio State, T.J. Barrett?
Yeah.
So every week, T.J. Barrett would, like, be signed to the practice squad and, like, released every week. Like, I don't know what it was. Like, they would cut him. So I don't know if he was in there to, like, run their scout team or, you know, because he's a mobile quarterback, if, like, they wanted him to, like, simulate something in practice. But if you looked at, like, the transactions, the Saints cut this guy, like, almost every week. Outside of that, like, what is the what worse role is it being, like, that extra guy on the staff that you come in? Like, and Chris Matt has saved their ass a couple of different times this season. And then, like, tonight, somebody's going down after this game, whether it's Sean Anderson or Camarena, or probably Camarena because he's thrown two innings so far. like, there's probably not a worse role in professional sports than that.
Well, I think we could see two guys even go down if they activate Taylor Williams, but
they could.
I don't know if they're the worst role because, you know, one thing is, like, if you're a third string quarterback, the fans don't really have an opinion on you. If anything, they might dream about what you can do. If you're a backup goaltender in hockey, they unless you've had a terrible year, I don't think the fans have much of an opinion of you. But I see so many Padres fans just rip on Nabil Chrismet.
And I think I got a hot take on Nabil Chrismet, but go ahead and finish your thought.
Anyone dissing Nabil Chrismet, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, he's put up pretty dang good numbers in a lot of situations where, I mean, I get it. He comes into the game. If you paid money to see that game, you'd probably go, oh, man, like they're punting. And you know, they've come back to win some of those games. So he's got a thankless job where he comes in and he gives innings. And he kind of replaced Perdomo, where it's just like the any day of the week, anytime, anywhere, and maybe he gets sent down after. And it's thankless.
My hot take on Nabil Chrismet is that he should be in the starting rotation.
Throwing 88?
Yeah. Like, you don't have anything. And I'm not saying because I think he's a great pitcher. It's like, what else do you have? I mean, you know, the guy could probably go out there every fifth day and give you five innings. Like, I mean, maybe you value him in that, like, up and down role. But, like, you have Ryan Weathers, who's struggling mightily, who's probably should be in double A right now. Let's be honest. I also think he's pitching hurt. You know, he hurt the ankle. And it went from he's going to probably miss the rest of the season to, hey, he's going to be back after, like, a start. That whole situation, that whole thing is kind of weird to me. I don't think he's healthy, 100%. And so Chrismet, you know, he's going to eat innings. He's probably going to be okay. I mean, I'm not expecting him to go out there and turn into, you know, Max Scherzer or anything like that. But, I mean, what else do you have? Nice 0-for-7 night for Hosmer tonight, by the way, for you Hosmer lovers out there.
I wonder, are there any left? I wonder, with Chrismet, I wonder if that would be a possibility if he didn't have options. Because I think part of his role is that he can go on the roster shuttle.
Yeah. I mean, that's probably the only reason I think that hasn't happened.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, you look at the rotation, it's in shambles. I mean, I try to be as optimistic as I can be. And if Darvish is perfectly healthy, if Blake Snell resembles the pitcher we thought that's the guy that's going to be on our team, okay, great. And then you get Paddock coming back soon at some point. Okay, like they can get bats hot at the right time. Maybe the Giants, honestly, like maybe the best hope is the Giants put this thing away, and the Giants, those 10 games in September don't come across as that intense because the Giants don't really need them. And maybe the Padres could kind of cakewalk in there. But you can't really do that without healthy starting pitching. So, I don't know. This team is going to go from there, but let's talk about, speaking of starting pitching, let's talk about Mackenzie Gore. Mark Wilkins was quite the making the rounds in the media this last couple weeks here.
Yeah, Matt Fryer's break Twitter challenge. That was
the biggest clout day in Matt Fryer's history, at least since I've been with the site.
And I mean, you have to understand why. I mean, for anyone who's not familiar with the Complex League, there's no media. Like, there's no – even if he had made the rehab appearance in Fort Wayne, it would have been on streaming. So when you go to the Complex, there's no professional broadcast of the game. I get a fair amount of questions about the Complex League. People ask if the games are open to the public. I say – yes, question mark. what people need to understand is when they go to let's say they go to a Storm game, they buy a ticket, they go into the Diamond. The employees there are there for you. They're there to serve the fans, the customer, give them a great game day experience. When you go into the Complex, the ballpark's literally open because it would cost more to have an employee to man the gate and not have it open. There's no one there to do anything for you, because if anything, you're more of an interloper and an observer than a customer. You didn't pay to go to the game. There's no tickets sold. Players, coaches, training staff, scouts, whoever else are freely wandering the complex, and they don't want to be bothered. So I think that would be a big concern with fans. And there are no concessions, so you have to bring your own water. So if you are going, if you have seen anything about the Complex League and you want my advice on going, bring as much water as you think you would need for however long you're going to be there, and don't bother anyone, especially the players, or else in the future we may not even be able to go. But that's kind of my PSA about the Complex League. Mackenzie Gore, it was really interesting because Mackenzie Gore had been on the El Paso roster the entire time that he was locked up at Area 51 behind closed doors in Peoria. Every time the Chihuahuas issued a roster, he was on it and he was active. So that was the only reason that there was even an inkling that Mackenzie Gore is going to pitch. Our own beloved David Jay caught the transaction on the wire that he had been assigned to the Arizona Complex League. And then I work in Peoria. So I left work in Peoria and I had a pretty decent feeling that he was going to be pitching in Surprise, which was nice because
Surprise.
For those of you who don't know your Arizona geography and the Valley of the Sun, there's West Valley and East Valley, and spring training has sites in both of them. Peoria, where the Padres are, is in the West Valley, and literally the closest ballpark to them is in a little town called Surprise, Arizona. That's mostly senior citizens. Surprise is the home of the Texas Rangers and the Kansas City Royals. So the game was within Surprise against, I believe it was Royals Gold, because the Royals are one of the few teams left to have two teams in the Arizona Complex League. And Mackenzie Gore was pitching. I got my rental car there at about 5:59 with a 6 p.m. first pitch, jogged lightly into the park. And as I noted on Twitter, it was a season-high attendance. If you were to not count the players, the other team personnel sitting in the stands, there was about 21 people. That included Eric Longenhagen from Fangraphs, a few other observers. And the Padres were the visiting team, so Gore went out for the bottom of the inning. The first thing everyone saw, Jerry Espinoza, wonderful photographer who provides a lot of photos to Mad Friars from Arizona and from the affiliates. The leg kick, totally different. And I think everyone, that was the first thing where everyone kind of, it was like a gasp. There were a lot fewer moving parts. The hip still goes up pretty high, but the knee, the toe doesn't point up. The hands don't go up quite the way they used to. It's a totally different look than what everyone who's been watching Mackenzie Gore develop since he's been drafted. They were looking at different delivery. And something that I heard noted on Friars on the Farm that I think there's some truth to, it's definitely possible the Padres were looking to get Gore to the plate faster. He had been having trouble with stolen bases, and maybe that's what started this whole thing. Maybe they went for that, and it led to the little bit of the issues with the fastball. But the bottom line is, this is where we're at now. As far as we did in the game, I know the snarky comments. I know the snarky comments that, oh, let's see what Mackenzie Gore can do against high school kids, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Gore's in his early 20s. He's never pitched in the majors. That Complex League team on the Royals had the 66th overall pick in the draft, who just left Alabama. He's 21 years old. It had their third-round pick catching. There's talent on that team. It's raw talent. Yes, I would expect Gore to do very well, but don't dismiss that there are some bats in there that could definitely barrel someone if you lay it out. And what he did was he located the fastball better than he has all year. That's been the big problem, command in the zone with the fastball. I saw Longenhagen noted that it was mostly at the letters, and I'd agree with that assessment. The breaking ball was is definitely tighter than it's been from what we saw in spring training and what we saw a little bit in El Paso. Changeup was deadly. As far as the mechanics, he repeated it pretty well. There were a few times in the game where it, you could see him get a little bit back in the old habits, but he brought himself back. One thing I think people saw if they've been watching the minors this year is if you watched him in El Paso, there was that moment where he kind of crumpled after that home run. It felt like his confidence took a huge blow. And this was definitely more the Mackenzie Gore that we remember from Lake Elsinore, if you're looking at it from a body language, confidence standpoint out there. He was definitely more back in that mode. So, you know, like I noted before on Twitter and our beloved Ben and Woods, yeah, he was pitching in the Arizona Complex League. That's not where we had Mackenzie Gore pitching in August of 2021 by any measure. I mean, I think it would have been completely reasonable to hope he's in the Padres rotation by now. But considering where he's been, which is 2 months completely off the radar, working his mechanics in, it was a really good first step. And it sounds like the second start last night was a pretty good second step. And I believe he's probably going to pitch on Monday.
Yeah, I think development is one of those tricky things. I think what people do is they read publications, you know, like Matt Friars, and they read Baseball America, Baseball Prospectus, MLB Pipeline, etc. And they kind of form an opinion that it's as easy as because there were Clayton Kershaw comps on Mackenzie Gore at one point in his career. They expect him to just be that guy, come up at 20, 21 years old, and be that performer. And the truth of the matter is, this isn't Dodger loving, but Clayton Kershaw is a Hall of Famer. And it's really unfair to compare a guy in his early 20s to Clayton Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw is one of the best pitchers in this era of baseball to do it, pure and simple. And so when he doesn't necessarily meet those lofty expectations right away, people start to wonder what's going on. And then last year, obviously, 2019, he looked like the most dominant minor league pitcher I've ever seen in Elsinore. And went to Amarillo at the end of the year in Double A and pitched okay. Had a couple of rough outings, getting some balls up in that tiny stadium and pitching in what was then the Texas League isn't the easiest thing to do. And, you chalk it up. It's a pretty good season. I think the 2020 season, the COVID season, I think hit him pretty hard. I don't know what it was. I don't know if it was like the weird atmosphere of from my understanding what that league was. And I think where I think baseball kind of screwed up is they let you have the 60 man roster. And then, with the expanded rosters, sometimes there wasn't enough guys there to field competitive teams. And they sure as heck weren't going to let them travel around and play real games. So I think, I don't know what type of instruction happened there or what it was, and whether it was a lack of meaningful competition, because that obviously carried its way into 2021, especially in the beginning of the minor league season, where some of these games are just sloppy and unwatchable. And the quality of play, honestly, even now in 2021, even now as we're kind of getting into the last 3 weeks of the season, is not where it was in 2019. So I think all those things, and I'm not trying to make excuses for Mackenzie Gore by any means, but there's other things that were going on there. What I saw in El Paso was a guy that couldn't command his fastball. And in 2019, Mackenzie Gore could put his fastball wherever he wanted. And that's part of why he was so dominant in Elsinore, is that he put his fastball wherever he wanted and mixed in one of his off-speed pitches, and A-ball hitters couldn't touch him. That hasn't been the case in 2021, obviously, in his brief outing in El Paso. He's looked really good in the complex league. And yeah, you're right. There's talent out in the complex league for sure. No, it's a long way from Petco Park. But I think for a guy to come out there and have his fastball command for the most part, two games in, it's encouraging. And so I think obviously the next step is maybe they give him one more outing in the desert and maybe he goes to an affiliate, whether that's Double A or Triple A. The Triple A season is actually expanded this year to the end of September. So there's a scenario where he can come up, and if the Padres can kind of keep it close, as bad as things are right now, they're still one game out of a playoff berth. The division is gone. They're not going to win the division. But I think Mackenzie Gore, if things go really, really right, could be part of the solution here.
Yeah, I mean, definitely that's something that Preller has said. I think he said not in the next few games. So I think there's a hope, if not a plan, there's a hope that it's one more start in the desert, at least a couple starts, probably in El Paso, and then maybe, like you said, if there's a playoff run, they've got him pitching innings. They're not sitting here doing this 2-3 inning stuff. He went into the fifth inning, his first start, and he went beyond that last night. So I have a legitimate hope that they're trying to get, up to 6-7 innings out of Gore. And if they think they can get that out of him in the major leagues, I think maybe they go for it.
Yeah, I think there's a possibility. You kind of hope that there would be a scenario in which Mackenzie Gore would help your team this year. And I think that's still a possibility, whether it's what the probability on it is, I really don't know, to be honest. But I think there's a scenario where he can maybe come up and give you something in September. Hopefully the Padres get some reinforcements. Darvish is set to come back today. Paddock is hopefully not far away. And with Joe Musgrove and with a healthy with Snell pitching the way he did, okay, maybe you have enough pitching to maybe you have those four guys, and then maybe Gore can come in and at the most optimistic scenario and give you four innings every fifth day. I mean, I know Longenhagen, who I'll trust his opinion more than ours, not to poo poo you or anything, but he's the guy that's got a scouting background, and said that he's going to be inefficient, but he could probably go out and get 12 to 15 outs at the big league level right now, which right. We expected Mackenzie Gore to be a frontline starter, but that could still happen. But if he could come out in September and go every fifth day and give you four or five innings, you'd sign up for that right now. We'll see what happens there. But Mark, the wandering traveler that he is, took a trip to El Paso. Mark is the unofficial mayor of Texas. He's the mayor of the whole state. Like that's a thing now. How was your trip with El Paso?
I'm actually drinking my beloved Lone Star beers, unofficial sponsor of the podcast.
We're not mentioning them again until they start writing checks.
Well, I'll mention them, but I'm not going to mention their brand new agave beer until they
play. You just mentioned it, you dipshit.
I didn't give it the name, so
agave.
Good luck finding it. It's not called agave. Good luck finding it. And Lone Star, if you want me to plug it, got to pay up.
That's Bound for Disappointment. BFD Podcast SD on Twitter. I'll take a check from there.
I'll take a check. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so my own personal opinion, because I'm pretty sure John Conniff disagrees on this, and that's totally fine. As a town, I like San Antonio way better. That doesn't mean I did not like El Paso.
You haven't lived until you've been to Fort Wayne, by the way.
Pretty sure I have, but San Antonio, super badass. El Paso, tough place to find a Lone Star on a Friday night. But El Paso, the food is phenomenal in El Paso. As long as you guys have any sort of tolerance of heat, incredible stuff. And then
a lot of Tex-Mex, though, right?
There's a lot of Tex-Mex. We avoided that. We avoided that. We went for the green chile stuff. And then it's only half an hour from Las Cruces in New Mexico, and that's like a whole other kind of food too. with a lot more pepper and heat to it. So that's really cool. Kind of a quiet town, in my opinion, but good place to spend a few days. Phenomenal ballpark. I mean, Southwest University Park really gives you everything that a major league park does as a fan, except for the capacity. Like, you have all the amenities that you have at a major league game. So that was cool. I mean, we were lucky to stay at a hotel. There's like a 5-minute walk to the park. So it was just like,
it's always convenient.
Yeah, it's like time to go. Cool.
Do you get like anxiety driving in a strange town? Because I do.
Not really, because I really like to drive.
I don't. Maybe that's the difference.
Yeah, but I mean, it was cool because like San Antonio, you know, we were staying like right in the heart of downtown, beautiful historic downtown. We were like a 3-minute walk from the Alamo, and where the Wolf is out by SeaWorld, we'd have to get in the car and cruise out to the suburbs to get to the ballpark that shouldn't even be there anymore. And that kind of showed what's wrong with what the missions have going on, why they really need a ballpark downtown. And you're in El Paso, you're staying downtown, and it's just, like, the ballpark is the old City Hall. They blew up City Hall and put in a ballpark. And you're right there. And even on Monday night, they had about 7,000 people in there. I mean, it's doing very well. You know, one thing I noticed in San Antonio, and San Antonio is different. It's a bigger city. They have the Spurs. They have, they have a little bit of college sports. But going around San Antonio, you never saw anything missions anywhere in town. But in El Paso, you land at the airport, and the first thing you see is Chihuahua's gear. And then we went to the first place we went to get lunch, all the neon signs and everything. They were like, you know, Budweiser, the official beer of the Chihuahuas. So El Paso has just really embraced that team, you know, and any I think anyone's wildest imagination with it.
Interesting. So if you gun to your head, you're picking San Antonio. If you had to like relocate, you're picking San Antonio over El Paso, correct?
Yeah, I mean, if I was leaving Phoenix, probably like after I finished school or something, I think probably the first place I'm looking for a job is San Antonio.
Okay. Good times. At least we know that you'll be able to find Lone Star beer.
It was a little harder in El Paso, but I still found it.
Yeah, but in San Antonio, it's plentiful. Like it flows from the fountains of the Alamo.
It's headquartered in San Antonio, and it's where it was originally made.
Yeah, it's the beer for guys that are 6'8". Apparently,
it's the national beer of Texas, Kevin.
Is that like their slogan, the national beer of Texas?
Yeah, it's right on the can.
Oh God. I thought the national beer Texas was like Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Well, funny enough, Pearl Brewing of San Antonio bought Pabst Blue Ribbon. Pabst was based in San Antonio for quite a while. They also own Lone Star. Whole bunch of transactions happened from there to where we are now. But I will say national beer of Texas as their slogan is a lot less aggressive than what it used to be, which was secede from the rest of the nation of beer.
Yeah, that's a little much, a little unnecessary.
So, yeah.
What is a more white trash beer in your opinion, Budweiser or Pabst Blue Ribbon?
You can make arguments both ways, but the thing with Pabst is that it's had a big resurgence in kind of like the hipster crowd. So I would say Budweiser, just because I don't think anyone in recent generations has really picked up Budweiser. I think it's stayed kind of true to its core.
Yeah, and there I don't think I've ever had Pabst Blue. I'm not a beer guy. Like I am not the drinker of this podcast. So I mean, I never like acquired a taste for beer. Even like to drink like one casually, because I know a lot of people that drink beer don't necessarily drink it to like drink heavily and get drunk. They drink it just because you just it's you like it, you know. It's like drink why I drink Coke Zero. I like it. It's good with a meal. It's filling. So
you just call it Coke Zero filling.
It can be like sometimes you know like you get that carbonation and okay. you drink it and you know it's not the best thing. It's like one of those habits I've really tried to like. There are certain things as an adult that you shouldn't do. And drinking soda, in my opinion, is one of those things. It provides no nutritional value. It's garbage. It's terrible for you. But it's just sometimes, it, you know, a nice Coke Zero on a hot day, it just hits the spot, man. It's like, and I drink Coke Zero. I don't know if it's like because I've got old, but like regular Coke tastes like crap to me, and I can't drink it. I don't really drink regular soda. I don't know if it's like the sugar or my brain's gotten used to the artificial flavoring in Coke Zero, which... You know, scientifically, is probably inherently worse, but in my mind, it tastes better. I don't know, but it's one of those things where that's like one of those things that adults shouldn't do. Is there like one food or like a drink that when you eat it or drink it, you're like, I shouldn't be eating or drinking this? Like, as an adult, like I should put this aside.
I think you made a good point with sugared soda. When I was a kid, I just felt like everywhere I went, I picked up a sugared soda. And having grown up, maybe like once a month or something. But like you said, like something like a Coke Zero or something, I'm cool with, you know.
Yeah, I mean, for me, one of those foods is donuts. Like I love donuts, but you get to a certain age, it's like you're. And it's not a food I eat regularly. Like I eat donuts, you know, maybe a few times a year. And especially now that I'm working from home and have been working from home in March of 2020, I work in a huge office. And so inevitably somebody would bring in donuts and it's like, ah, they're here. But like, it's not one of those foods where I'd ever go to like, you know, a donut shop and go buy routinely. That and milkshakes. Like milkshakes always make me feel really fat. I don't know what it is. It always makes me feel kind of gross. And, you know, I'm overweight as it is. And so it's one of those foods I try to stay away from.
Yeah. I mean, that's fair. I mean, taste changes as you go along. That's why, you know, even if you've grown up with the delicious taste of Lone Star Original, there's always light and new seltzer.
Yeah.
To keep you, for those of you calorie counters, and for those of you into the new ranch water fad going on from West Texas out here to Arizona. There's Lone Star Rio Jade at 4.5.
We are here's what we're gonna do. Since you want to be an asshole and try to advertise for a company that's not giving us money, because now I'm starting to get pissed, to be honest. Like they're not giving us money. Why are we doing advertising for them?
Because they're going to.
Okay, so here's our move. Are you ready for this move?
No.
You're going to get ready for this move, so pucker up. Everybody knows I'm the brains behind this operation. So here's what we do. Here's our move. When we put this pot out, we tag Lone Star Beer's Twitter account and tell them that we want them to give us free beer. I'm not going to drink. I just want free beer.
Well, it's a good thing that I'm telling you about. They're great options that include Das Bier, a 4.8% crisp and refreshing Kolsch style, celebrating the German population of the Texas Hill Country.
If you were in front of me right now, I would put on a pair of leather gloves, pull it off finger by finger, and slap you right across the freaking face.
Why leather gloves? Why is that involved in this?
Because it hurt.
Do your five fingers represent the five new flavors of Lone Star Seltzer, bringing you the best fruit flavors that Texas has to provide?
You son of a bitch. This is not scripted, by the way, you son of a bitch. I feel like right now we're about to go on a friggin' tour like the Duff Brewery, but it's like Lone Star, and it's like Lone Star Dark, Lone Star Pomegranate, like Lone Star Shrimp. Shrimp flavored beer.
Well, didn't the Duff one have it where they're all coming out of the exact same vat into the bottles? I think they had that, right?
Yeah, I think so. And there's that episode where Homer got exotic on the one where like he sees the alien, but it turns out to be Mr. Burns, spoiler alert. And he's drinking Red Tick beer, and it's just a bunch of dogs swimming in the beer.
Yeah.
That's pretty, that's probably what it is. But yeah, so Lone Star Beer, does that mean I get to pick a company next time where I want to just incessantly talk about them and hope they sponsor us?
I would say you can add your own because, you know, we believe in individuality, just like the Lone Star State of Texas, which was its own nation. That's why it's the National Beer of Texas. So, Kevin, you know, you want to bring your own sponsor to the table? I encourage that greatly.
I don't even know who I'd pick.
Well,
because, like, I probably want somebody to give me, like, I don't know. Because Coca-Cola is too big. That's thinking too big. They're not going to sponsor the show.
I think you should go into like a card dealer or a card shop or something like that.
See, that's actually what I want to talk about. Like, did you hear about this? Fanatics is actually going to have the rights after 2025 to be the sole producer of baseball cards. And where this sucks is, like, there's a couple of things I think are going to happen. But basically, I think 5 years from now, so I think it's after the 2025 season, Topps loses, not only do they lose the rights to produce with the teams and the logos, but they're going to lose the Players Association deal too. Because right now you have Topps, which, you know, has the official licenses, but you have Donruss, who I believe is owned by Panini. And Panini puts out like Prism and puts out a couple of other brands that have like the players, but don't have, they can't use like the team logo. So like if, you know, a Fernando Tatis card has the SD blocked out and they remove the lettering from his jersey and they just says San Diego, it doesn't say San Diego Padres anywhere. And so Topps isn't even going to be allowed to do that. And the card industry has been one of those things that is just gotten crazy during COVID. It is absolutely boomed. I mean, it's gotten so bad that, like, I mean, people were literally fighting and stabbing each other at Target to buy cards, and Target no longer carries baseball cards, football or basketball cards in the store. They still carry hockey, which is kind of weird. But I went to the Target the other day by my house, and they actually had some blaster boxes of 2021 Upper Deck, which was interesting, but no base, none of the big three sports. And so the baseball cards are getting crazy. And I kind of wonder, like, what is Fanatics going to do? Like, Fanatics, their value is like exponentially greater than Topps. So, I mean, does Fanatics now buy Topps and just have Topps to continue to make the name? Like, they kind of form in a sense? Because Topps has been the consensus leader in trading cards my entire life. Like, I mean, when I was a kid, you know, we lived in the junk wax era, right? Where you'd have Topps, Upper Deck, Donruss, Score, Leaf. You had Studio Baseball for a while, if you remember that. You had all these other random sets. Like, you had the iconic Padres cards from, like, 1993, where, like, they're, like, the grandmother cookies or the mother cookies or whatever they were, that whole set. So all these different card producers out there, and that's what ultimately drove the value down. So it's, like, you kind of wonder how the value of things is going to hold up over time. But it's kind of a weird move because, I mean, one of the things I do, like, as a hobby now is I watch, like, guy. Do you know who this Jabs guy is on YouTube?
I don't, but I imagine he probably opens cards or something, right?
Yeah, he's this freaking dude, and he's really – he's kind of obnoxious where – you turn on, he does a video like every day. Like this dude posts videos like daily, and he gets on TV or on the YouTube. He's like, "Hi everybody!" And it's got this really annoying voice, and I watch it because he opens like a lot of high end shit that like I can't afford. Like the other day, he opened these like this case of cards. It's like there's like six cards in it, and they're all autographed. And the case of cards costs like $1,600. So like, you know, I'm not going to spend $1,600 on six baseball cards. It's just not going to happen, but you know, I still want to see what they look like and, you know, see what he hits. And this guy is like, he's a weirdo because I don't know if you know his backstory, but he has like he has a Patreon where like you can give him money every month and he sends you cards, and he does breaks like every day where he'll break like cases and cases of cards. And it's like his wife left him because he opens cards too much. And then like he's a school teacher is like his real job. But then this dude just sits there and breaks cards and spends like thousands of dollars on it. And it's just, it's crazy to me. And I think, you know, you kind of wonder about someone like that who's obviously put a lot of money into, I would assume he's making a haul. Because I mean, I don't know how you can afford to spend $30,000 on a case of cards when you're a school teacher. You wonder, like, for people like that who have really invested in the card market and are profiting off the card market, how this Fanatics deal impacts the value of the current cards that we have, you know?
Yeah, I mean, my fear is just the way the industry is going is that Fanatics is going to really ignore the basic card that a kid wants and turn it into just a very high-end, you know, one of whatever autographs, memorabilia, all that. That's my biggest fear. For me, I hate the single license. I really do, because for me, one of the coolest parts every year was figuring out who had the coolest set. There are some years where I love the score set, or I love the Fleer, the Upper Deck, the Donruss, the Leaf. I just hated this Tops or Nothing era. I don't have any joy in it. There aren't any sets I've collected since they've done that. And you know, if Tops goes under from this, I don't give a shit, because you know, you put all your eggs in that basket, you lose that license. I mean, if Fanatics just buys Tops to make this happen, get a brand, I don't care. If they buy another old brand like an Upper Deck or a score, I care maybe slightly more. I just think it's all gone to crap. I understand it's a business and it's gone the way it has because there are probably more adults buying cards by a good measure than kids. But I just choose to believe in the romanticism of being 8 years old again and saving up a few bucks from some chores I did or something and going to the store and getting that first pack of cards for the year. And I just choose to believe in the power of that over a single license. I hate it. I hate all of it.
Yeah. My whole thing with a lot, do you follow any of these card guys on Twitter?
Like no. Just random? Okay. No, the closest I come is Tom. That's
okay.
It.
My question is like, how do like these people afford to buy like cards that cost so much? Like, it's not like people that like that have like these crazy professions. And maybe it's because the answer is they don't have kids, and that's, you know, probably what I'd be doing if I didn't have kids. But like, you see like some of these guys that will buy these like awesome Tatis cards, and it's like, yeah, I'm selling this right now. It's $550. I want to buy other stuff. And then I got this one. I'll give you a deal. It's like $400. It's like, how are you acquiring these cards? Are you taking money like investing it? And so like, I honestly, like, if we ever have guests on this podcast, because we've talked it over and we've already decided that the first guest in the history of this podcast is going to be Hacksaw. That is what's going to happen. We're going to talk to him. I'm going to volunteer to be his editor if he'll pay me. I don't know if he makes money from his website, but if he wants to pay, I'm like, all I'll do is make sure that you spell the guy's name right. I mean, I can clean that up for him. That's going to be our first guest. Second guess, maybe we get one of these card dorks on here.
He's not making money from the website, Kevin. I got news for you.
Do you know that though? Maybe. What would you do? Okay. How would you handle this situation? Lone Star Beer approaches him and they sponsor his website and they choose not to sponsor this podcast.
You know, there are some realities that while they may be possible, you just choose not to see them, because even though, sure, it's possible that a brand as glorious as Lone Star Beer would sponsor Hacksaw's website, you're talking about the National Beer of Texas. And, you don't offer original light Rio Jade seltzer and DOS beer just saying about Hacksaw's website. Maybe even mention at 5:30 in the morning on a Saturday at KUSI. No. If you want the full brand portfolio of Lone Star put out the way it deserves to be, you're bound for disappointment, baby. If they sponsor Hacksaw, not this website, I promise you, by the end of the week, I'll be drinking Shiner Bock.
This 15 minutes is brought to you by Lone Star Beer, the national beer of Texas, Bubba. By clicking, you confirm you are 21 years old. Bubba. My Hacksaw's not very good. But...
How often does he call someone Bubba?
I don't know. That's actually what Jeff Dot Seth does when he does his Hacksaw. He always calls people Bubba, and so I just copied him doing that. So
I got a follow on Twitter from Dot Seth. So you know, if this was 2009, I'd be hot shit.
There you go. When they were ruling the airwaves of 1090 when they were getting dozens of listeners, about as many people listen to this. So it's very exciting. I'm just giving them shit. Dossa is actually a pretty good guy. I shouldn't make fun of them.
No, I like him.
Plus, if he heard this, he'd kill me. The whole point of like, and a lot of people give them a lot of crap, but why I like their podcast is just every now and then Dossa will just get on one and he'll just start roasting people and it's hilarious. And I hope that one day I get roasted for something funny. Besides Dave Palais trying to start things with people on Twitter. But I've learned not to take the bait. So.
Yeah. Dot Seth does the best Coach Quintero of all time.
He does. Steven Woods is pretty good too.
Woods does a good one. Woods is best as what's the San Diego State AD?
J.D. Wicker.
He does evil J.D. Wicker. That is one of the best ones. Hey, Ben, must slap the taste out your mouth, Ben. That's one of the best ones. The angry coach is great, though. I mean, I remember the one where it's like talking like he's sitting right there across from us with a scarf watching his soccer. Yeah.
I can't do anybody in the San Diego media. If I drank more, I could probably do an impersonation of certain people. But
what are you trying to say about people out there?
I mean, one of my favorite things growing up in my childhood was watching a drunk Rod Luck interviewing people back in KUSI. When that guy seemed like he was hammered every morning. Rest in peace. You remember that? I didn't have cable growing up, so we had like three channels. So it's like that's what you got in the morning. Is you got Rod Luck interviewing people or Willard Scott wishing 150 year old people happy birthday.
It would be like Hollandia Dairy, and it'd be like 6 in the morning, and you couldn't tell if Rod just woke up or if he still hasn't gone to bed.
Yeah. I remember, and then he would go out to high school football practices and like make them practice at like 5:30 in the morning because he wanted to do a 90-second hit with whoever the head coach was.
Yeah,
I remember that those days fondly. I remember one of my buddies bitching about because he went to Grossmont, that's where I went to high school. And they had like this special early morning practice because KUSI was going to be there. It's like nobody watches KUSI. KUSI has gone off the deep end. I mean, they're what's that far right wing one called the network? There's Newsmax and there's the other one.
OAN.
There you go. It's like OAN. Like they're like basically affiliated with each other.
Well, yeah, and they give you the zeitgeist of San Diego, like you know, he's the Padres, and then
for QAnon, if you're in the QAnon stuff,
yeah, they go from the Padres lost last night, you know, they played a million innings and they didn't get a hit for 18 hours, and then hey, have you ever thought about ballots, printed on bamboo paper sent from China to disrupt the election. Well, we thought about it. Coming to you next, we'll talk about that.
Yeah, King Newsom came out with a new ruling. Let me tell you something that's interesting. So I moved to Mira Mesa a couple months ago. And Mira Mesa is like a very, like, I mean, it's probably the most, like, diverse community I've ever lived in terms of, like, the population and different, like, races of folks, you know, because just in my neighborhood, like, I have, it's really cool. There's just different ethnicities. There's lots of, like, different restaurants. Like, you have a lot of really good Mexican places, but there's a lot of different, like, yeah, like, Thai places. Like, there's six Thai places within, like, a mile and a half of my house, which is pretty rad. These people that live next door to me, because I live in a house, like, basically where theirs is, like, at the beginning of the block. Mine's, like, the second house, and there's a third house, right? And then so on and so forth. But the people that live, like, right at the front of the street, they have these, like, signs in their front yard about the recall election, because they're obviously very right-wing people, just judging by the fact that their car is covered in about 25 bumper stickers that say liberals lie. And they have these, like, you know those, like, political signs that people put in their front yard? They have, like, the recall Newsom. And every day you go out, like, they're, like, I don't know if they, like, take them in and put them out, but, like, they keep going missing. And so, like, they'll be gone for a day, and then they'll come back, like, 2 days later. And so I've kind of wondered if somebody is, like, messing with them, or if they're, like, just putting them away. And because usually when you put something down, you leave it there until the election's over, which for me, I will never put any political signs in my yard, front yard, for any reason, just because I don't need the attention. You know what I mean? Like, I don't need a campaign. But do you think that, like, those, do you think they're getting messed with in a, this is a very, like, I mean, Mira Mesa, you know, in the presidential election, voted like 70% Democrat. And so I think for these people standing out like a sore thumb, do you feel like it's getting messed with? Or do you think they just, people wouldn't, like, people don't put those things up and then take them back down and do that every day, right? That's not a thing.
I doubt it. I think they're probably getting yanked all the time.
So it's like, they're getting yanked all the time. Like, wouldn't you, like, get tired of putting them out? Wouldn't you think?
Not if I was a psychopath.
Like, I mean, I won't do it personally because I'm not trying to get arrested for, like, tampering with somebody else's stuff. And, like, I respect people's opinions even when they differ from my own. And but it's like, it's just kind of fun to me because every day you'll go out there. I'm like, I saw him on Monday night when I went to go put the trash can out. And then Tuesday morning when I had to go into the office and drive into the office, they're gone. And then, like, today I went out to go pick up some dinner, and they're out again. And then so it's like, if I go out tomorrow, what is going to happen to these signs? We don't know.
One way to find out.
Maybe I will try to bond with those neighbors by bringing them one of the many flavors of Lone Star beer.
One can hope, and hopefully it's the Rio Jade. It sounds like they could use some agave-based refreshment.
I feel like they could, you know. I try to there's a guy that lives across the street with a family, and, you know, our relationship has progressed to that we give each other the head nod if we see each other. You have this family that's across the street from me that they karaoke all the time, and they're, like, terrible at it, and you just hear off-key renditions of Taylor Swift and Shania Twain quite often. It's a lot of fun. So, yeah. Very, 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 very good neighborhood. While you're out gallivanting in El Paso, though, I was holding it down, spending the weekend with just me and my two kids, and it was a very interesting time.
Yeah, it sounded like it had its moments of. Was there a point where you thought about just dropping them off somewhere?
Yes. Multiple times. So I decided, because so my wife went out of town for, like, a, like, girls trip with, like, basically her siblings and some cousins. They did, like, a pseudo family reunion in Texas, like, in Dallas. And, you know, I was like, whatever, you can go. It's fine. Like, I'm not, you know, I can hold it down here. And so on Thursday, she left on like basically Wednesday night, and then came back Sunday night. And so the Thursday, I decided I was going to do like a boys' night out type of thing where I would take them to go do something fun. And that blew up in my face horribly. So I took them to the Family Fun Center in Claremont, over on Claremont Mesa Boulevard, opened up again. And so they have like miniature golf, and they've gone miniature golfing a couple of times. It's relatively inexpensive, and you know, it'll kill about an hour, hour and a half of time. You know, they can go out there and play and do their thing. And so we're doing it. And my youngest son, who's 4, is obsessed with hockey. Like, he loves hockey. So he tries to hit the golf ball like he holds the golf club like a hockey stick, and he tries to whack it like it's a hockey puck. And so it leads to him hitting the ball off of the course a lot. And then the other one, like, can't stand still and, like, is just whacking the ball all over the place, not following the rules, not paying attention to people in front of him, not following those protocols, which is, like, stresses me out because then people look at me like I'm weird. And then so the theme of one of these golf courses is like Storybook Village, and it's like the 16th or 17th hole, so it's like one of the last holes. And there's like a voice that says like, "I'm going to get you." I think it's from the Three Little Pigs. And so it happened in the middle of my 4-year-old punting. It scared the ever-loving shit out of him, like to the point where he was like crying hysterically, thinking that somebody was going to get him. And I was trying to tell him what it was and to kind of show him, you know, try to be the alpha male that I am. I took the golf club and I whacked the thing of where it was coming out of, like the speaker, with the golf club a couple of times too. I like how I said the alpha male and you laugh, but that I'll ignore that. And so I was trying to like show them that I could mitigate the threat and that I could handle it. And that didn't really work. And so, eventually I got him to calm down, and he was fine after that. And then so in the inside, they opened up the indoor part of it to where you could play like games. And so I'm like, all these games are pretty lame and they're kind of outdated and old, but it's something to do cheaply. So I went and bought $10 worth of tokens, and we start doing that. And then my son, the 4-year-old, is very he's just kind of weird. Like he's a lot like me. And so what would happen is he saw this NASCAR game and wanted to play it because it's like a racy car game. So I go in and put the 4 tokens in, and he's like, "I don't want to play now." I was like, "But I already put the tokens in." "Yeah, I don't want to do it. I don't want to play. No." And refuses to do it. I mean, when he refuses to do something, you can't sell him on it. Like he's done. And so then I start doing it, and then he has another meltdown in there because one of the games scared him. And so he was just – he's kind of at that point of the day where he's, like, tired. And then, you know, the other kid is, like, running all over the place, like, trying to do stuff. Is like, not paying attention, is running into people. And then, you know, we end up leaving there. And then we decide to go get something to eat, ask them what they want to eat. And the 4-year-old is the only one that could make a decision and said he wanted pancakes. That's, like, his favorite food. I'm like, "Fine, there's a Denny's right here. Let's just go eat at Denny's." We get to Denny's, and he drops his fork on the floor 3 different times. The first time he did it on accident. The second and third time he did it because he thought it was funny because I kept getting annoyed at him. And so that happens. And then he eats like 2 bites of his food. He's like, "I'm done." And then I take them home, and then because they miss their mom and they want to be around me, they end up sleeping in my bed with me. And so now I have them both in my bed, and neither of them can like lay still. And so I didn't sleep very much that weekend just because, you know, I had them up my butt 24/7. And I did my best to try to go to bed when they did, and that didn't work out well. And so I was running on fumes by the end of Sunday. It was a lot of fun.
I'm glad you made it. I mean, it really, just judging by your tweets, it sounded like you're having kind of a tough time out there.
You know, I think the hardest part of it is like, I don't really mind taking care of them and hanging out with them at all. I'm pretty hands-on, but I think having the other parent, you know, like I don't know how single parents do it. Like, to be honest, like, especially like single moms, single dads, where you don't really get, you don't have the other person to kind of buffer and you don't get a break. Because, you know, sometimes it's just nice to be able to do something and to have that break, but to kind of be the guy for, you know, 4 days, essentially, it was tough. But, I took him grocery shopping, went, you know, made sure that we were stocked up on food and stuff. Took them out to eat a couple times, took them to the park. I wanted to take them to a sporting event, but like every freaking baseball team, the Padres were here. I could take them to that game, but the nights that they were here, they were on the road. There was like one game I could have taken them to. The Storm were on the road. There's nothing else going on. And so we just kind of hung out at the house and try to keep them from killing each other, because they love each other. They're like best friends and it's really sweet, but they also get to the point where they get sick of each other. And it usually turns into the 4-year-old being kind of a dick. Cause that's what he is. He's just an ornery, cranky. He's a lot like me. He's just kind of a grouch. Offered him a Lone Star beer to loosen him up. He didn't take it. And so, I survived.
I'm glad you made it out to the other side. I had my concerns there for a minute.
I did. I came out, where they say ship shape, came out of that experience, you know, intact. I made it. I'm alive. And now we're thriving.
What more can you ask for?
Yeah. We're getting late on time here. You got anything else you want to go over before we hit the old stop button here?
No, it's good to be back.
I think we might do. How do you feel about doing? Because there's actually a lot of stuff we left on the table tonight. We still went an hour and a half because we're the Windbag Podcast. What do you think about doing a second show this week at some point?
I mean, tomorrow's Mad Friars night for me, but I'll have time. And then Friday, I'm going to the Dierks Bentley show, so I'm probably unavailable.
Christ.
But I'm available Saturday night.
All right, let's make this work, because when we go, we go. We're like a Buick. Like, once we get warmed up, we go. We'll cut out of here. We'll see you guys next time. And for the love of God, Padres, please win some games. Please, I'm begging you.